I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Well, guys, welcome. Over the last week, I have programmed a super-powered triple feature. And I thought I would talk about that with you guys today. I kind of stumbled into it. It wasn't intentional until I got to the third one. But, you know, the first movie I watched was M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable, which is just one of my favorite movies.
Oh, no. Please don't tell me you watched the trilogy.
No. Not that trilogy.
Because Glass.
It doesn't end well. You know, but I think Unbreakable is a perfect standalone movie. It is. I enjoy it so much more than I have enjoyed any other of Shyamalan's movies. And I like Signs, and I like The Sixth Sense. And I think, you know, if I was ranking his movies, I think Unbreakable is number one for me, with Sixth Sense a close number two, and then Signs a number three. But I really enjoy Unbreakable. And yeah. I love how it's just random, non-heroic guy, just a workaday guy gets superpowers. And how he doesn't seek to be a superhero. He seeks to connect with his son. And
there's so much about that movie that I love. And it doesn't have what I would consider the huge twist that every Shyamalan movie has. I mean, there's a twist, but it's a predictable one.
Yeah. Yeah. The twist in that movie is, you know, kind of broadcast throughout the movie. Right. I mean, it is the least hidden surprise, I think, of Shyamalan's movies. But I love Unbreakable, even though it is unremittently sad. You know, it is just, it doesn't stop in its, you know, downcast eyes and just sadness throughout. But I love that movie.
You know, I have to wonder, I've never thought about this until right now. Do you think M. Night Shyamalan doesn't know how to swim and has a fear of water?
He may.
You combine this one and Signs together.
Right.
And I see a trend suddenly.
Well, you know, I remember back in the day, back in, you know, when you were doing character generation for Dungeons and Dragons. And I had this from the Arduin Grimoire, a random trait table. And one of them was water-soluble skin. So, you know, water touching your skin would react like acid. So maybe he's got water-soluble skin. That could be it.
Maybe.
Yeah. So the second movie in my triple feature, I kind of stumbled onto immediately after watching Unbreakable, but it was the extended director's cut of Chronicle. You know, the found footage movie, you know, first person camera documentary style super powered movie.
Isn't that
teenagers.
The guy who directed he directed that Fantastic Four movie also?
That never came out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Chronicle, and I had never seen the director's cut until last weekend, and it was fantastic. I really enjoy. I had forgotten how much I enjoyed that movie and how good.
I remember the trailers, but I never actually saw it. And I even bought it on DVD and never got around to watching it.
I'll tell you, it's surprisingly good.
Like, it is really good. It is, yeah. And you know, the special effects are, you know, they're really low key, and because it's all kind of shot on a handheld, you know, video camera. You know, that it's okay that they look that they're cheap because, you know, the video quality isn't great because of the documentary style shooting. And then they kind of blow up at the end of the movie when the special effects get really crazy and they look great. And I had a blast watching that movie. And again, kind of continues with that tragic, depressing tone. Right. Kind of a dark portrait that I just really enjoy. I you know, you can, and there are times in the movie where like, oh, this is going to go really bad. You know, you get to see a really young Michael B. Jordan in that movie. I had completely forgotten that MBJ was in it.
He was in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway, terrific movie. Do recommend the director's cut that's currently available on HBO Max. Though I got a note saying leaving soon. So catch that while you can. And then Paul Wayne, my third choice, the triple in my triple feature, Brightburn.
I have never seen Brightburn.
Oh, you gotta see
another Brightburn. One I've never seen.
Brightburn is essentially a Superman story, except Superman's a sociopath. And he, you know, it is telling the story of essentially a young Clark Kent living on the farm, and he doesn't have the benefit of Pa Kent or Ma Kent. And he just does terrible things. And, you know, it's super, super bad kid. And it's also a terrific movie. And what I love about all three of these movies is that, you know, they're all three very different, but all of similar tone. And not a single one is a superhero movie. They are just people with powers trying to figure out how to live with them. And, you know, what they do with them demonstrates their character. And Brightburn is a terrific horror movie, because don't get me wrong, it is a horror movie. And you know, awful things happen in it, but it's also just so terribly inventive. And it reminds me so much of that comic that we read back when we first started podcasting.
Irredeemable?
Yes.
You know that that's been licensed for a movie from Netflix, right?
Yeah, they have licensed so much that I haven't heard anything about.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll ever actually happen, but
yeah,
it is licensed. Yeah. And they also licensed Uncorruptible, which honestly, I think there were three total books in that universe, and I loved all three of them.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah. Unbreakable, Chronicle, Brightburn.
Yeah, hell of a triple feature. And yeah, Brightburn's a James Gunn joint, isn't it? Or produced, anyway.
I think he either produced or wrote it. I forget which. But I really enjoy Brightburn. Awfully good. I recommend, if you haven't seen it, go see them. They're terrific. And hey, I welcome your suggestion for a superpowered triple feature.
I like it. All right. Yeah. Well, I recommend the original 1990s Captain America, the original 1990s Fantastic Four, and the original 90s Punisher movie.
What trilogy. Is wrong with you?
Tutor.
You're off the podcast.
So,
off the podcast.
Report back.
Paul, I will take your trilogy, but I'm going to pull the Fantastic Four one and replace it with the 1980s Supergirl.
Okay. I actually kind of like Helen Slater's Supergirl.
I like all three of these movies. I love Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
I actually do enjoy Dolph Lundgren Punisher. Now, I will say there is supposedly, I know there exists online, I think it might actually be on YouTube, the original director's cut of the Captain America movie. Albert Pune directed that movie.
You're and talking about where he's got the glass shield? Is
that not the old school. I'm talking about the one that came out in the 90s where, basically he battles the Red Skull during World War II, and then...
Oh, I don't think I ever saw this.
It's it was like a canon film. And, he battles the Red Skull in World War II, and then when he gets frozen, the Red Skull also kind of gets taken out, but he gets his face, healed. And so then it comes back to modern day. It's got Matt Salinger as Captain America, Ned Beatty's in it. Ronnie Cox, I think, plays the president.
So I met that Captain America last year at the Superman celebration.
Did you really?
Yep. He was one of the, they always have, besides the Superman related celebrities, there is a small comic and toy store there that they bring in B-level movie stars from different eras. I met one of the Flash Gordons. I've met, in this past year, they brought in that Captain America.
It is, I will say, it is not a horrible movie for 1990. It is not a good movie.
It's the same thing. I will say the same thing about it that I say about Supergirl. It is not a technically good movie. The script is not good. It has plot holes you can drive a Mack truck through. And it is still fun, and I will watch it anytime I see the opportunity.
Yeah. So there's your recommendation, Aaron.
I am unfamiliar with this Captain America movie. I can't believe I'm unaware of this.
It came out, it was around the same time. You know, this is when Marvel was licensing their films to anybody. Because I think they were going through bankruptcy or whatever. But this is around the same time as that unreleased Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie. They all kind of happened around the same time.
Yep, except this one is actually released.
Yeah, this one was actually released, but not in theaters.
Ah, okay. So it didn't actually... Okay, that makes sense. Because I'm like, God, I can't believe I was seeing movies in 1990.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is this started off as a much bigger budget film. Apparently, you know, they talked to Val Kilmer, they talked to Dolph Lundgren and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And Val Kilmer would have been a great Captain America back in the day.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, one thing before we move on from this, just because you mentioned Val Kilmer, have you guys seen that there is a new movie coming out with an AI Val Kilmer?
I read the headline on that, but I didn't read the article. I was just like, oh, dear.
Officially approved by his family, but it's got real actors in it, like actual,
like
normal actors. So it's interesting that, you know, this week also Disney laid off a whole bunch of folks, including visual effects folks, because they're going to start using AI to enhance their special effects work.
Well, and they're going to outsource all of that stuff. I read the article on that one, and you know they let go an entire division, and when they have so much trouble getting their movies out with finished effects, that seems wildly irresponsible.
You know, the thing that I'll say,
uh-oh,
and I'm not justifying Disney's actions. I know that I'm not going to go into an AI, you know, political discussion as much here, but because I know there's people have very strong opinions about it. But I will say, from a corporate perspective, they don't give a shit if the special effects don't look good, because they're still making $1 billion. The movies are still making $1 billion, right? So
that's
like,
true.
I get it. People are like, wow, the special effects were kind of cheesy, or the green screen really wasn't that good. But you're still sitting, you still paid your now $20 per ticket minimum, you know, to see that movie in theaters. So like,
they lost the battle for IMAX this Christmas, right? You know, Dune got all the IMAX theaters, and
but did you see what they did in response?
The Disney?
Yeah.
That they are advertising their own special fee,
special Infinity Vision. They're like, we don't need IMAX, we have our own certified Infinity Vision theaters.
It's not the same.
I haven't done IMAX in a long time. I watch them eat on the super screen, usually is what they call it here. So like, our movie theater has the IMAX, but then they have the super screen, and I tend to prefer the super screen more than the IMAX, mostly
I don't get me wrong, I love IMAX from a visual presentation standpoint, but what I will tell you is I tend to yield more towards the Dolby or the Super EMX, or let me clarify, I tend to lean towards the theaters that have the recliner seats, because generally IMAX is a normal theater with an IMAX screen. But like,
okay, that's hilarious, Paul. I thought you were going to make fun of me when I said that my reasoning has nothing to do with how it's being presented. It's all about the chairs.
Yeah, no, we're middle-aged men. Like, we're same page.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying. However, the IMAX ticket is more expensive than the other settings. And so Dune is going to be better positioned to make more money than Doomsday. And so I would think that Disney would want to win the battle of the IMAX screen solely for the fact so that they can tout, hey, we went head to head with Dune and we came out a winner. I think it's going to be really hard for them to demonstrate their superiority, because, you know, there's a big, huge blemish on Marvel that, you know, it's not a guaranteed opening. Now, I think Doomsday is going to do just fine, right?
Yeah. This one is bringing in the fans of Avengers, the fans of the X-Men movies, you know, basically by combining the universes all in one, they're going to get multiple fan bases to it. It's going to make a ton of money.
Yeah,
and what I love about it. Sorry, go ahead, Aaron.
I suspect that, like, you know, Endgame and Infinity War, there'll be a lot of repeat viewing in theaters, right? I mean, I think the movie's going to do just fine because people are aching for a return to form for Marvel.
But yeah, and they're bringing Chris Evans back in this one, so
there is a whole element that is just poised to jump on any weakness that movie demonstrates. So it's ticket sales, if it is unfinished special effects, any of that kind of stuff, I mean, could take it down. I mean, I do think that's a vulnerability left themselves open to.
Yeah. What I find interesting, because this week was CinemaCon, that's why we're talking so much about this, and they had a teaser that was only shown to CinemaCon attendees and things like that. But what I find most interesting about the way they're hyping Avengers Doomsday is they're like, it picks up right where Endgame left off. This is a direct sequel to Endgame. And I'm like, you've had like 5 years of movies between the Endgame and now. Like, those happened, but, you know, this is a sequel to that one. You know, so they're definitely like, hey, remember when you loved us? We're making a sequel to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it. I'll see it in stupid Infinity Vision. We were talking about it before we were on the mics that Mandalorian and Grogu is coming out May 22nd. Tickets are now on sale.
I'm so ready for that movie. I'm looking forward
to Mandalorian. Me too. I cannot wait. And apparently 49 minutes, very specific number, of the movie were filmed specifically for IMAX. And so that's a little bit of a struggle for me because of what we were just talking about.
Right.
Because like when you film a decent portion of your movie specifically for the format, like, I kind of like that. But at the same time, I just wish IMAX did the damn recliner seats. That's all I'm wanting. Just give me IMAX recliner seats and I'll be happy. But yeah, lots of good time to be a geek.
Have you noticed? I mean, I know that it's just finally the industry has finally recovered from COVID. But golly, there are so many trailers for movies I actually want to see. Whereas this time last year, there were very few. But I mean,
last year was like a lull in this type of cinema. And I think everything just kind of took a minute, regrouped, and now we're going to get just flooded with content, I think, over the rest of the year. Because like coming up in the next month, I'm very interested in seeing the Michael Jackson movie. But we also have Mortal Kombat 2. We've got Mandalorian and Grogu. You know, those are two pretty big geek-friendly releases.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and of course, we're going to get more as we enter the summer.
Well, and there's all kinds of other, you know, non-genre films that are coming out that look fantastic. So, you know, I'm excited about that stuff, too. I mean, we were talking about before we hopped on the mics, what is it called? The Sheep Detective or whoever it is?
Yeah, Sheep Detectives.
That looks fantastic. And I'm just generally not the sort of thing that I'm into, but it looks hilarious. I think there's just a lot of really good programming for theaters, and I'm excited to see that. I just need for theaters to stop being so ridiculously expensive.
Well, and for theater goers to stop being such assholes, you know.
Yeah, that'd be nice too.
At this point, I don't care that I'm paying $25 for a movie ticket. I just need everyone to shut up and put their phones down for the duration of the movie. Like you paid, you paid basically the cost of a concert ticket to watch this movie. Why pay attention? Like watch the movie.
I love that you've reached this point, Paul, because I've said for years, I hate the movie going experience. I go because that's where they release the movies and I would watch them at home if I had the option because I hate the people.
I generally go see movies at like 11 a.m. And I got to tell you, most of those people aren't there yet.
Yes, 11 a.m. is like the early showing, especially like if you take a Friday off, if you go to the first showing on a Friday morning, it is a whole bunch of white dudes sitting by themselves and they are there to watch that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I am all about the crowd that shows up at 11 a.m. because, you know, I'll see a lot of dads with their sons when I go see Marvel movies at 11 a.m. You know, it's a different crowd and they're there to watch the movie. They're not there to, you know, clown around. So, I dig that. I have not experienced, you know, the poor behavior in a while, but I'll tell you back when I used to work in a movie theater way back when we would actually eject people, you know, if somebody was talking during the movie, we'd come, we'd give one time that we took him out of the theater. Did that all the time. I remember vividly taking a guy out of the theater that I had to manhandle out the door. And I'm like, buddy, one way or the other, that door. And I wound up having to open up the exit door with his body on the press bar and throw him out onto the curb.
Wow. Yeah. No, I think, times have changed.
Yeah. Well, and that was the day that I was offered a job at the Royal Arms Hotel in London. the manager for the Royal Arms came up and, you know, in his British accent, handed me his business card, said, "I really like your style, and call me if you want a job."
And Aaron could have worked in London.
Yeah.
You could have been MI6, Aaron.
As a bouncer.
It's a start. It's how you get into MI6. Haven't you seen The Kingsman? That could have been you.
That's right. Never off the peg, Paul. Never off the peg.
You know, one movie that they did talk a little bit about at CinemaCon was Godzilla Minus Zero.
God, that looks
obviously
good.
Looking forward to that. But it, I don't know. I was in like a random Godzilla mood this week. And I think the third issue maybe of Godzilla Infinity Roar came out this week. And I'm like, you know what? I know I didn't like those first like Godzilla versus Spider-Man, Godzilla versus Fantastic Four books. But let me try this Godzilla Infinity Roar book. So I picked it up, and basically the story of Godzilla Infinity Roar takes place, I think, after there was a series called Godzilla Destroys the Marvel Universe, and apparently it ends with the superheroes sending Godzilla off-world. Well, what has happened is that Null, the king of the symbiotes, has now taken control of Godzilla and is basically doing his own annihilation wave with Godzilla across the cosmos, in that Godzilla is taking out these planets and Null is, you know, taking over the victims with symbiotes. And I gotta say, I enjoyed the hell out of the first issue this week.
That is shocking, because those Marvel books were terrible.
You know, this reads a lot like, frankly, this reads a lot like the stuff that I really enjoyed back in the late 90s, you know, early to late 90s, those Infinity, you know, books, those Marvel Cosmos books, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff like that. Like, it reads a lot like that. You know, it's superheroes in space taking on this extraterrestrial threat. Guardians of the Galaxy, heavily featured in the first issue. The art is very reminiscent of, like, Ron Lim. I feel bad that I don't recall the artist name off the top of my head, but he has a very Ron Lim-esque style. And I'm like, damn, I really like this book.
I think that Marvel's really missing the boat on their Godzilla stories. If I were writing the Marvel Godzilla book, it would be a direct sequel to the Godzilla book that they wrote back in the 80s. You know,
because those were good.
Yeah, those were fantastic. And I mean, you could, I would, you know, update it with the current state of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all of that, but I would have them have to put that team back together to deal with Godzilla. And that's where I would go from, because I mean, those were so good. And here's the thing, is that those books are finally available again, right? You know, so you could still make it new reader friendly, but you could also, you know, tease your omnibus that came out last year and drive sales to that. I mean, I just don't understand why Marvel hasn't done that. It seems crazy to me. And because the Godzilla stuff that they're doing just seems very disposable to me. And,
it is. I mean, I would definitely say that about it. But I don't know. Like I said, I enjoyed this first issue. I will check out the second issue of Infinity Roar. But I don't know. Like, I was surprised at how much I liked it.
Yeah, I want Godzilla books to be good. I keep giving them a try and they keep being terrible.
Yeah.
There was one that I thought was really interesting, though, and I need to catch up on it. Godzilla Heist. The story is not about Godzilla himself so much as predicting where Godzilla is going to hit and then pulling off the heist of the century in that city while Godzilla is attacking.
I think that's a marvelous idea, you know, it's kind of like I'm going to wait and commit my murder when the natural disaster occurs and they'll never find that body. And they'll just assume that, you know, that guy got sucked up into a tornado because that's when I killed him. Just saying. Not that I've thought about this a lot.
I was about to say, this kind of sounds like an idea you've considered.
I haven't thought about it a lot.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I actually purchased a decent number of books this week, mostly because I wanted to get caught up on Battle Beast. I got this Godzilla book. I picked up some stuff we don't talk about on the podcast, like Absolute Batman. But, you know, we're talking about some rando books this week, I'll say. Because, Wayne, you wanted to chat a little bit about a book you picked up called Dead Teenagers.
Yeah, so this was the second issue of it. I picked up the first issue a while back, and I thought about talking about it then, but I really wanted to hit it. The concept of this book is kind of like a Groundhog's Day type story where every day they wake up and it's prom, and throughout the day, things happen leading up to prom where all of these kids are killed every single day. They all die in the exact same order, but each day is a different outrageous scenario. So it's not like a, you know, sometimes it'll be they'll die in car wrecks or things, but generally it'll be there's a zombie apocalypse this time. There's an alien invasion this time. There is Nazis and Russians from the future come back in time working together to do a Red Dawn scenario. And it's just all of these ridiculous things. And then at the end of the first issue was where they got me. The next scenario they woke up in is middle age. They woke up, it's not prom day, it is 20 to 30 years later. They have no memory of their lives from prom up to this point, and they don't know if they're going to be killed or not. And so they're trying to discover their lives, reach out to each other. But this always happens within a day. So, you know, you find out pretty quickly that, yeah, they're going to be dying.
And so did they just wake up with mysterious aches and pains? Like, why does my knee hurt?
Yeah,
in case two of them are married with a kid and they don't remember the kid or know how to be parents. And one of them is like, aren't kids supposed to be in school during the day? It's been a funny book. It has been the art is really good. The story is fun, despite the fact it is constant, gratuitous, violent murders. Yeah. And it's one of those books. Yeah, I picked it up. I really enjoyed it. And I'm now two issues in and I'm still enjoying it.
Well, I will have to check that out. Well, Aaron.
Sir.
Last week, we had talked about Thundercats Silverhawks and how disappointed I was in it. But, you know, that it had a preview for Mum-Ra, the Ever-Living, a prequel book featuring the origin of the villain from the Thundercats. That takes us all the way back to ancient Egypt and how Mum-Ra came to be. And for some unusual reason, you picked it up. Tell me more about that.
I can reveal my unusual reason. Are you ready for this?
Are you a secret Thundercats fan?
No. number one, I really like Declan Shalvey, who is the writer on this book. I like Declan Shalvey. I also like mummies a whole lot.
Okay, I do too. Are you going to see the new movie, The Mummy?
I will most likely see the new movie, The Mummy. I probably won't see it in theaters. But
I hear it's very gross.
I will probably see it. I still need to watch the Frankenstein movie that Guillermo del Toro made. I haven't seen it yet.
That's so good.
Anyway, so here's the thing. I don't always listen to you, Paul. I don't know. I know that will come as a huge surprise. And so when you were talking last week about this book, I tuned in to the Declan Shalvey part of it and the mummy part of it, not so much on the Thundercats part of it. And so I picked it up, you know how it is on Comixology. You see the little thumbnail. And if it's a book that you're already disposed to picking up, you just click buy now. I did not look at preview pages. I didn't really examine the cover. And so when I opened it up, much to my surprise, I see that it's from the Thundercats universe. And I went, fuck. But that said, I kind of enjoyed the book.
I will say it's far from anything original, but I actually did enjoy it. I mean, it's basically like Black Adam or Apocalypse or, you know, any one of these villains who apparently were born in ancient Egypt. They all kind of have similar origin stories.
Yep.
But I quite enjoyed this.
Yeah, no, I thought the writing was fine. I didn't think that it was particularly innovative. I really wish that Declan Shalvey had illustrated the book. And don't get me wrong, you know, the fellow who did illustrate the book, Rafa Lobasco, did a great job. I just really like Declan Shalvey's style. And
I do too. Now, he illustrated that Thundercats Silverhawks book, which...
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. The only weak part, now you'll have to tell me, Paul, if this is part of the Thundercats thing. The four spirits that provide him his power, I felt like that was the weak part of the book. I felt like that really, I thought that the hieroglyphics piece, you know, as they were kind of investigating it, I thought that the story would have been stronger had all we've seen of the four spirits really just be shadows without, you know, that they just be looming and menacing. But, you know, the conversation I thought was rather pedestrian. Their dialogue just didn't seem mysterious or sinister enough. It did not seem otherworldly enough. It just seemed like a crowd of guys. And that's what I disliked about it. And maybe that's the tone in the source material. But boy, I did not care for this book. That was the thing I did not care for.
Which is interesting, because I actually quite enjoyed, I mean, I like, you know, because I kind of just thought they were like Egyptian gods, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah, so I will say I enjoyed this way more than I enjoyed the crossover book. I will probably pick up issue 2 just to see where the story goes. It is a 5-issue series, but yeah, I thought it was a decent first issue.
Well, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm not sure that I'll pick up number 2, even though I thought it was.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I'm. I don't think I'm that interested to read it through.
To see how he ever lives?
That's correct. The ever-living blue-eyed Mumra.
Blue-skinned Mumra.
There you go.
You know, so since, I don't know, somehow these last few weeks, this has turned into an 80s nostalgia podcast, and poor Andrew keeps missing it. This week, G.I. Joe issue 21 came out featuring the continuation or the return of Scarlet and Storm Shadow to the book, you know, after, you know, we have not seen them since before the G.I. Joe series started proper. We only saw them in the Scarlet miniseries. It didn't even occur to me until I opened this book that this was issue 21. And for any G.I. Joe fan, issue 21 is a big deal. You know, issue 21 of the original Marvel book was a silent book. And, you know, it's one of the most iconic G.I. Joe comic books of all time. And so it didn't even occur to me until, you know, like I said, I opened this book like, oh, this is going to be a silent issue.
So that explains why it was so quick to read. I mean, I didn't know that. I've never read any of the old G.I. Joe comic books. So coming in, I was going to make a comment about it, that it's like, this was one of the fastest reads because it is almost all action with very little. It's not completely silent. There are a few words spoken. There is some boxes.
Yeah, there's some stuff to there's some setting that's established. But yeah, Wayne,
the original 95% of the pages have no words on them.
Yeah, which is an homage to G.I. Joe issue 21 from way back in 1984, written and drawn by Larry Hama. The silent interlude, all focused on Snake Eyes, which I will say, shockingly, we still didn't get Snake Eyes in this issue. But I know that means nothing to anyone since Andrew's not here. But I'm shocked that we did not get Snake Eyes. But Wayne, what did you think of this mostly silent issue of G.I. Joe?
Oh, I loved it. I loved getting Scarlet back. The fight, it was an incredible fight. You know, three characters that I absolutely love seeing fighting on the page. Getting to fight a whole army of Cobra. And just getting to slaughter them. Yeah. And I like the overall context of they're there to get Scarlet out, whether she wants to get out of her undercover mission or not. And she obviously doesn't without Jinx.
Yeah, this book is great. So much storytelling in the art because it's told without words. But at no point are you confused or like, what's happening? Like, a lot of action, a lot of emotion. Lots of stuff happens in this issue. I thought this was one of the best issues of the series so far. And I'm a little disappointed because in the letters page, they say something about like, Oh, it's going to be a moment before we revisit these characters again. But I assure you that the events of this issue will have a major impact on the series in the future. So it's like, we got Scarlet, and now it's going to be a while before we see Storm Shadow and Jade and Silent Master again.
That's one of my biggest frustrations, is Scarlet was by far my favorite of the miniseries, and we don't get her in the main series. Like, she's not a major character in it. We've hardly seen her at all. And now we finally get her, back, only to find out we're not going to see her again for a while.
Well, we're going to see her again. We won't see Storm Shadow, Jade, and you know, the Arishikage clan. Okay. Again,
as long as we get to see her going forward, because I want to see the aftermath of this.
Yeah, and I think we will. I think that's what we'll do. I think that's what we'll see. But as far as the return of the ninja clan, I think that's what they're saying. It'll be a moment before we see them again, which that is my favorite aspect of G.I. Joe. And, you know, I don't know if you guys remember Danger Girl when that came out. Obviously, big homage to G.I. Joe in the ninja characters and that. And that stuff is just like my favorite part of these books. Maybe because I'm an 80s kid and ninjas were so big in the 80s.
I freaking love Danger Girl.
Oh, yeah. That first series is just one of the best. Yeah. But yeah, I thought this book was fan-freaking-tastic. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing these characters return again.
Yeah, did you see the, after the letters page, the previews of what's upcoming?
I did.
The next phase of the Energon universe starts here. Mask. In June.
Yes, I can't talk about it, but some of us have read the first issue of Mask, and I look forward to talking about it in early June when the book comes out.
Are we
embargoed until June 8th to actually talk about what's in the book. So I look forward to talking about it with you all. So make sure you stick around for that. But before then, we actually get an Energon Universe special, which is the Free Comic Book Day book. So Free Comic Book Day is on May 2nd. I think it's called something different this year because the diamond stuff has changed. I think maybe not. Maybe it's still called Free Comic Book Day. But May 2nd is Free Comic Book Day this year. And they'll be releasing an Energon Universe special. But they are also releasing it for sale the following week in comic shops and digitally. So looking forward to seeing what that previews. What's coming up to the Energon universe?
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we have the newest issue of Superman, issue 37, continuing that Superboy Prime reign of the Superboys arc in that book. We'll also get new issues of other books like Justice League Unlimited and things like that. We have an unusual release, Event Horizon Inferno. Which apparently is like a new Event Horizon miniseries written by the same writer. I don't know if I'm going to hop in because that first one left me so brutally beaten emotionally.
Do we know if it's another prequel or is it going to take place after the event?
So 7 years after the events of the movie.
Ooh, see, I'm interested in that.
Yeah, now I'm looking at it. Damn it.
Mother trucker.
Yes, I might check it out because sequel.
In grand Event Horizon style, we'll do a death pact on this one.
Yes, we'll venture into hell together.
Hold my hand, Paul, Thelma and Louise style. We're going over.
Yes, I love it. Yeah. So that's it. But sadly, you know, while we're talking about Danger Girl is not available digitally.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Very little of Danger Girl is actually available digitally. Yeah. Only Danger Girl and the Army of Darkness, not the G.I. Joe crossover, like none of it. Yeah. So that's a big bummer.
It's too bad. I really enjoyed Danger Girl. I thought that was a great, big, fun book.
Yeah, I'd read it right now. I'd buy it right now if it was available.
Yeah, absolutely. Not even on sale. You'd just pick it up.
Yeah.
Crazy town. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's comics. We want to know what your triple feature super-powered movies are. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal, guys. Well, hey, great chatting with y'all today. Can't really say we missed Andrew. I mean, you know.
I did. Really,
what does he bring to the show? What does he bring to the show?
G.I. Joe other knowledge.
Other than somebody for Paul to talk G.I. Joe with. Other than
I mean, what else do I need, really?
Yeah, fair point. Fair point. Fair point. All right, guys.
All right, folks. Y'all. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.